Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Because I was the big girl, the big sister, I was very, like, sturdy. I was the one who would, like, look after myself and look after the others and set a good example. And I could never be vulnerable. And I wanted to be, visibly vulnerable.
Hello and welcome back. In today's episode, I'm joined by the journalist and author Daisy Buchanan. Daisy wrote a book called How to Be a Grown-Up in 2016 that was part memoir, part useful tips, and it was received very well. So she's following it with a new book that's out in 2 days on the 7th of March called The Sisterhood, in which she amusingly muses on her relationships with her sisters. I've just finished my copy and thought it was very funny and it really struck a chord with me, so I'd encourage you to make a note to buy it when it's out. As well as writing books, Daisy is a busy journalist and also hosts the podcast You're Booked, in which she invites a guest to discuss the books that they've enjoyed and those that have been instrumental in shaping their lives. Needless to say, there's a bit of book chat in this episode, but also a lot about beauty and how Daisy's reflection has affected how she's felt throughout her life, as well as the products and rituals she's found to be excellent. Here's Daisy. Hi, Daisy Buchanan.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming on. I need to ask you before I start with anything else about your name. Were your parents very into literature?
Yes, they are. But actually, this is it is an assumed name. It started as a joke, and it was a bit to do with me when I was first using social media, wanting to have a bit of a gap. Also, because I was working on a teen magazine, and I wanted to do stuff that kind of wasn't teen.
So Daisy came later on then, the Daisy identity. But it's interesting that it's almost, that sets up a duality, really, very early on in our conversation, that there is a side of you that's almost the private Daisy, and then the public Daisy.
Well, I mean, it's funny, because, you know, growing up, so I was mostly in, I was born in Dorset, and we moved to Buckinghamshire when I was about 5, and then back to Dorset when I was 10, so... Mm. Always been kind of, you know, around nature. I live in Margate by the seaside now, and I loved being fairly near the coast. So I think I was definitely kind of inspired to go back there. But yeah, I used to think a lot about kind of, I suppose, makeovers and changes and who I'd become. And I remember thinking a lot about... Madonna, who seemed to get to just, you know, that this idea of constant rebirth and reinvention. Every year it's like, which Madonna is she going to be? Like, I just thought, does she really, really commit to her New Year's resolutions? She's like,
but also, but also, do you think she decided to do that, or do you think it's a natural progression? Because I think it must have been that she sat down and thought, this year I'm doing, you know.
Yeah, I don't know if she's whatever. Almost like a... She was a proto-trend forecaster, I think. And I'm sure that a lot of it was her kind of setting the tone, but also being quite futuristic in terms of her thinking. There's that, and also Meg in Little Women and her makeover.
Yeah.
And she gets sexy, and she's punished for it.
Yeah.
As, you know, it's sort of, it's good.
What's
sort of like pilgrim literature, you know, that doesn't go down well.
But usually people are rewarded when they do the makeover, which is the one with Audrey Hepburn, where she's a chauffeur's daughter, and she goes...
Sabrina,
that's it. And she comes back and suddenly everyone fancies her. And I think that when you're someone who feels like you're unpopular and potentially, you know, not someone people would fancy or not someone people aspire to look like, then you think, one day I could do that.
Oh, God, yes. Because I used to be absolutely, absolutely obsessed with the idea of dyeing my hair blonde.
Okay.
Because I was...
What colour was your hair?
Well, it was when I was little, it was blonde. And there's a picture of me. Mm. And it's properly, like, you know, down to my back and wavy. And it's like Barbie hair. Like, what happened? Nice. Because being, you know, one of 6 girls.
Yes.
And lots of... children, absolutely fair enough. My mum was like, this is quite a lot of maintenance, the hair of this child. So went and got it chopped off, and it went like really, 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 really dark brown overnight. And it was short, and it was in really tight curls. And half the kids at school thought it was a wig, and the other half thought it was a hat.
So we're the same age, and when you were young, when my memories of that time of being younger were that it, people were experimenting a lot with makeup and the way they looked, but it wasn't really very polished and neat. It was all kind of quite fun still.
Everything sort of stood out in your face is my memory. So I'd maybe be like, oh, I'll try lipstick, and I'd have no notion of really. I think even foundation, I'd sort of put that. It was always that concealer that looked a bit like a lipstick.
Rimmel.
I remember the ones. Yeah, did they do that one that was kind of, it's supposed to be a tea tree thing that was supposed to fix spots?
Yes,
absolutely did not. It just made everything scabby and terrible.
Yeah.
So, or you know, I think eyeliner actually that was the most transformative thing. And my mum, because this is why there are so many of us brought up strict Catholic family.
Yes,
my mum didn't really wear makeup. She'd maybe wear makeup twice a year, and she had a real horror of it. And so I was obsessed, and I used to think eyeliner is like, that's a proper, I've wanted to look in my head.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I ever said this out loud at the time, and this is a reductive word, and it's not a word I use anymore, but my feeling very strongly when I was sort of, you know, 11, 12, 13, 14 was I wanted to look slutty. It was a sort of a sporty sluttiness, or and I don't know if I quite had that. When also because of, you know, being a teenager and not having very much money, and you know, we were very, very comfortable, and I was really fortunate in lots of ways, but I didn't have massive pocket money, and there was always a sense of sort of like making do and making versions of the thing. So I'd read the glossy Sunday supplements, and I loved, I can't remember if it was Style then, the Sunday Times Fashion Monitor, things like Stella, what incarnations of those they would have been. But reading these super aspirational things, knowing about, I'm going to get this wrong, is it Maharishi? There's the All Saints, like the Session Combats and things.
Yeah.
And all that kind of like sort of weird, like bad Western Asian thing.
Yes.
And then I just put a skirt over some trousers with my like, rigging my eyes with the
skirts
river liner.
Over your trousers. I'd forgotten about that. That
I
was
awful.
It was
a bad scene,
that was bad,
wasn't
it?
And do you remember the and the versions of them that sort of ended up on? I remember because I probably had them. Oh god, yeah, that was not good.
No,
that's the thing about growing up in Dorset is when you're doing the worst kind of cultural appropriation going, no one can call you on it because pretty much every other person that you meet is white and over 70.
So tell me about your sisters then. So were they, what ages are they? Where do you sit?
We are really close in age. I'm the eldest. Thank you for asking. Thank you for not assuming I'm the eldest, because I'm very paranoid about that.
You're the eldest.
So it's me. I am 33. Probably I'll be 34 by the time this goes up. And then
when are you 34?
It's March.
Ah,
so
okay.
Yeah. Beth is... That's a good question. She must be 30. Did she turn 30? No. I can't do biological maths.
No, I know, it's hard.
She must be. She'll be 33 this year. Then Gracie is after her. Oof, my. She was 30 last year, so she'll she's 30. She'll be turning 31. Liv is 29 this year. She's 28 at the moment. And Maddie and Dottie, twins, are both 26. All girls.
All girls. And then the, your mum and your dad.
All girls, mum and dad. I remember Beth had a really kind of like pop punk goth stage really vividly. And we were quite, because we were so close in age, it got quite intense. And I remember there was a real switch when she was maybe 10 or so. She just wanted to be me and wanted to copy me. And we did also, we did quite a lot of sharing and like pooling our resources. And because she was, I was, I started puberty quite early, and so our bodies were different.
Okay.
And we were, I was kind of a bit in denial about this. And so we'd be like, well, we've got this much money and we can, you know, get as much as we can for our dollar with, you know, it's like, you buy this top and I'll buy this. And I'll be like, and every time she got something new, I'd be like, great, because that's for me too.
Yeah,
but then
yeah.
obviously I would stretch it and she'd get very upset about that. We're absolutely justified in that being upset.
How did that make you feel though?
Oh, God, well, no, it made me really miserable, you know, because I had issues with eating disorders and issues with my bodies. And I think, and it's something that kind of comes up in my book, The Sisterhood, which is about growing up with, you know, as one of six girls, and about sort of, you know, what I've learned about womanhood and feminism in a wider sense. And that intense environment of being all girls and all, you know, you want to be like them. And you feel so kind of weirdly lost when you're not.
Etc.
I remember as a kid doing so much secret reading.
Yeah.
And having this weird, like, because there was no sort of like through line to it. And there was like, my dad loves Stephen King, so you had to have all the Stephen Kings.
But so also, what were you reading?
Oh, well, I remember reading Carrie quite early.
I haven't read that.
It's quite sexy. There's lots of good car sex in Carrie. Yeah, yeah. That was all, because again, Catholic childhood, sex was kind of, really had to look for it. And I really, really looked. Valley of the Dolls was one of the first books I read. Lots of hot lesbian action, Valley of the Dolls. Yeah. I enjoyed that very much.
I'm currently reading Lace. Have you read that?
Yes! Okay, have you got it to the Goldfish yet?
Yeah, I'd never read it. Rebecca Reed actually gave it to me for my birthday and said, I can't believe you've not read this. You've got to read it. And I'm loving it. But yeah, the sex scenes are quite sexy in it. And I was like, if I'd read this when I was 14, I'd be like, this is saucy.
Because
like,
it's properly explicit. But I reread it a few years ago. Because I do just remember being like, that's a good bit. But friendships in Lace and this group of women and the way they fall out and come together and that tenderness, that's the real love story.
Completely.
Joy.
Completely. Yeah.
And I missed that first time around. And I think that's what the books I love are about, that kind of, you know, to bring it back to like the sisterly connection, whether that's a biological sisterhood or not. Like one of my favourite books growing up that I was totally allowed to read, and that was fine, was Ballet Shoes. I just loved Nell Stratfield so much. So Ballet Shoes is about three fossil sisters and they're adopted. Mm-hmm. So great uncle Matthew, who's not in the book very much, he's got a niece called Sylvia, and they live in this sort of big house in South Kensington. Mm-hmm. And it's my friend Lauren, she put it beautifully. You know, when you're like, oh, that's exactly how I feel, but you put it into words. Like, favourite genre of books is posh but poor. You know, big rambling house,
Catch
lots
of the
people.
Castle sort of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, all of my sisters are quite academically able, went to quite an academic school, and there was lots of kind of competition. But there was, and that is something I've only really realised recently. I've always thought of myself as being quite ambitious, but I'm like, well, am I? Or is it just because I've failed, or I feel like I failed if I've not got the A star, or whatever the equivalent of the A star is in your 30s? And again, it's not for me. I don't know who it's for. For all kinds of reasons, you know, it's never enough. And I think it took me a long time to stop doing this, more in romantic relationships. Yeah. We're like, well, ooh, if you're easy to please, your approval means nothing. Who's going to be a challenge? Who doesn't like me? When I was, I think, 13 or 14, I started experimenting with sun in, and I went quite ginger, and I was in denial about how ginger I was. Yeah. Not that there's anything wrong at all with being ginger, it just, it was quite orange and quite sudden, and I was doing it, you know, with, I remember I had this, I loved it so much, I had a Carmen hairdryer that was like forest green, and I think I asked for it for a birthday, because there was a family hairdryer, and I just wanted one of my own. There was a diffuser I didn't know how to use, but I'd like spray my whole hair with sun in, and there'd be quite a rooty dark line, and then
orange. What did you do before you went in the sun?
No, well, you could do it.
Could you develop it with a hairdryer?
You could do it with a hairdryer.
Oh, I didn't even realise that, because my sister used to use it, but she used to go and lie on a balcony at my parents' house. My sister was really blonde anyway, but she wanted to be blonder, so she'd constantly lie there with sun in next to her. There'd be like a Hawaiian tropic and then a sun in. I didn't realise you could do it with a hairdryer.
I mean, that smell would be so Proustian, kind of a scent.
Yeah.
I was a... very much, it's quite bright ginger.
Yeah.
I remember certain kind of clothes that I really, really like. I think it's like, that's something that I've not really thought about or talked about before. How, because that was really, it was when I moved to secondary school and I started having kind of eating disorders. Not, I mean, it's going to be a trigger warning to be a big millennial, but I don't, I know it's something, it's really important. And I know, because I used to find that as well. And one of the things that kind of, what gave me the idea was I was always obsessed with reading about eating disorders, and it was horribly motivating. But when I did start to lose weight, I felt in charge of my body for the first time, and I was really excited about clothes.
Was it a conscious thing that you decided to say, I'm going to eat in a certain way, do certain things that make me thinner? Or do you think that there was, I mean, obviously there was more at play, but I mean, was it a conscious decision?
Oh God, I think so. I think, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but it's true. I think up to a point, it's quite kind of aspirational. And it was weird as well, having gone from this fairly small school where I was a nerd, and I wasn't popular, but I was like, I was tolerated, and I knew exactly who I was. I was always kind of, you know, top of the class. I didn't really have to kind of put much in the way of effort. And I got to this all-girls school, and everybody was just so kind of glamorous and really, really, like, slim and clever. I wasn't clever anymore. Right. I was just average and, you know, not kind. And I remember having these shoes that, and I used to, and I'd wear them now, actually, but they were, like, my new school shoes. Mm. And they were dark, they were black suede with silver buckles and kind of pointy toes. And they were quite kind of elfin. But I remember as this, you know, nerdy book-loving child, I was like, well, these are quite, you know, these are a bit like violet. Can't say her name, Trufius, Virginia Woolfie. And then I got there and everybody was wearing kickers, and I just thought, oh no, no one's gonna notice. And yeah, the feeling that always there's, I felt at the time that I carry so much in my head. I'd be cool if everybody only knew how cool I was, but now I'm like, in the wrong shoes, and I made a big huge mistake. And that was,
so your external was at odds with what you felt was inside.
Oh god, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's kind of why it started. I wanted to have a kind of a secret, I guess. And that's something that I've thought about a bit in writing the book, realizing how, and I don't think I really consciously picked this up for a long time, but when you're part of a big family, everybody is up in your business always, because that's how families work. And, you know, it's lovely and wonderful, but also as someone on the brink of adolescence, wanting something cool, and also I think always feeling like, because I was the big girl, the big sister, I was very like sturdy, I was the one who would like look after myself and look after the others and set a good example, and I could never be vulnerable, and I wanted to be visibly vulnerable, which is a weird thing to say, but there was a, you know, kind of this idea that I was, again, it's like the people pleasing, isn't it? It's like, I'm the one who always says please and thank you, you know, makes conversation with difficult grown-ups. And
there's also something, so similarly, I didn't have an eating disorder per se, but I a lot of what you said resonated with me. And I think that when I got to the age of wanting to feel like a woman and wanting men to fancy me, it wasn't necessarily that they wouldn't have done in my size, but that I wanted to feel vulnerable as a woman, because that was what I saw and what I read about. It was this thing of, you know, a woman being carried somewhere, or woman being like just dainty, and I wasn't dainty, I was quite sturdy. And actually, when you get older, you're like, oh great, I don't get ill as much, I'm quite robust. But when you're young, you just want to be dainty and fey almost.
I never ever once felt that way. I remember really silly that when I was very little, so my cousin Claire, I mean, now Claire is like, she loves the outdoors. I think she'd like to be a farmer. She got married in DMs. She came in on like the back of a tractor.
Yeah.
You know, but she was just this like this willow. And I think she had, I think she had asthma. I was very caught. I was very jealous of the kids with asthma, because I was just too sturdy. I think I was about six. Yeah. I got scarlet fever.
Yeah.
I think. And I was like, well, mummy, I can die from this, can't I? She's like, not in this century, no. And I was like, what do you
such
mean?
Such a shame.
I want you to be crying. I want you to think that I'm at death's door.
Yeah, of course. I got whooping cough last winter, and I was delighted when the doctor said it was whooping cough, even though it was horrible, because I was like, what a Victorian illness.
I was the sort of kid who, if there's a pantomime and they want someone to go up on stage, I'd be like, me. And I was never chosen. And Beth would, I mean, quite often this happened, where she would hide before she went on the stage. And I think it's that kind of attitude that has got me into trouble. But I'm always like, me, I will make my life into an adventure.
Yeah.
I don't know, I look back and I do wish I had known then that having a boyfriend, it's like having a status symbol. And I think it did sort of give me a bit more freedom. I was pushing for freedom always, in a way that I think not all of my sisters were doing, but some of them did. But I always felt like I was, I suppose, just really wanting to go on to the next stage, even if I didn't really know what that was. I was never,
in retrospect, do you sometimes wish you'd let things happen to you rather than making them happen yourself?
Oh god, yeah. I wish I'd thought, like, you know, I might not get a boyfriend until much, much, much later, and that is fine, mm-hmm. or ever. I wish I'd not felt like I need all of this external validation. I'm always looking for validation. That is it. And it's like, again, I had that. I remember it's like a list. It's like, I really want a boyfriend and I want a mobile phone and I want a part-time job and all of these things. I was just so desperate to be a grown-up, to have this life, to get close to the Sunday supplements and the, and like, this is going to end in me in London with my bag of designer clothes, living my life.
So tell me then how you went from being a girl dating a boy, doing your GCSEs, to being a grown-up at, let's say, you know, 20, writing. How did you do that?
I did a lot of student journalism when I was at uni.
Did you enjoy uni?
Isn't it? I really, really loved it. I think the second year, I was miserable as arse. I was with this, my very first boyfriend still. We both ended up at the same place. Our relationship was in the death throes, and I felt so... Oh, God. I just remember feeling really, 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 really insecure and really, 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 really unattractive. And also the fact that I was, you know, supposed to be in this very serious relationship with someone that I just didn't fancy. And yeah, feeling like, how do I... I don't think I felt as though I had the option to leave or to get out of it.
Were you still struggling with eating and...
Yeah, I was. Well, I put on a lot of weight in my second year, and it was because I was just misery eating, comfort eating, and drinking really, 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 really heavily because I was just trying to escape my life all the time. And I think there was a bit of me, it's like, oh, you've got a boyfriend now, so you can give up. And that's the other thing as well, where, oh, God, it's a horrible thing to say or to think. But I think probably. About the same size then as I am now, but I felt really, you know, I was definitely a lot less sort of healthy and less thoughtful. Yeah. I remember doing this horrible job at a call centre and coming home late and every night having like a pack of filled pasta covered in butter.
Yeah.
And then, and you know, eating like vast pans of things and thinking, well, I don't think anybody... I can't leave this relationship because nobody else will be attracted to me. Mm. So,
and that was the only relationship you've been in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then, drinking far too much because thinking like, well, this is what you do when you're a student. You have fun and go crazy. Yeah. And, you know, at the time, even my boyfriend was worried about my drinking. Yeah. I've lost friends because of it. I just go to parties and pass out. And I think everybody was so worried about me and so sick of being worried about me. And I was like, I'm just having crazy adventures. And like, no, you've got a problem.
Yeah. Were you managing to keep up academically?
Barely. I wasn't really enjoying it at all. So I was kind of, you know, I was handing my essays in. Mm. I was more or less... going to lectures, but it wasn't like school. It was the first time where I really wasn't excelling and I really didn't care. And I think it was, I just felt so disconnected from the course.
Yeah.
You know, that part of things I wasn't enjoying.
You're reading English.
Yeah. And what I'd loved so much about studying at school was you have the text and you rip it up and get so close to it and really, really go in. But, and it was a lot like, it made me think of, in Friends, when Phoebe is teaching Joey the guitar, but she won't let him hold the guitar. And I'm like, you can't really, we don't want to talk about the book. We're going to read what these five old dead white men think about the book. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the base of your essay. And I was like, I'm so bored.
It's so depressing and so different, isn't it? Because you feel like the critics are more important than the actual book. Mm. And then you're taken away from the joy of it. So it's
completely. Yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So there was a student newspaper, okay. And again, it was that sort of have-a-go hero instinct, mm-hmm. That's like, I want to do this! And the first thing I did was I interviewed Tim Westwood, you know, the big dog. And this email went out, and I was on the, that was it, because they'd the first meeting of the student paper, mm-hmm. came, and I was, you know, like, oh my god, this is all I've done, this is the beginning of my career. So yeah. Kathy was like, oh, guys, does anyone fancy coming to this thing with me? And I was like, no, not my thing, not really. It's like, oh, I can't go. But yeah. I ended up on a mailing list anyway, and I got this email saying, does anyone want to interview Tim Westwood?
Yeah.
Like, well, yes, thinking like 20 people will do it, they'll get some like cool, you know, mm-hmm. third year, he's like, oh yeah, Westwood's my friend, I'll go and do it. But no, perhaps unsurprisingly, I was the only volunteer. It was me and this lovely girl, Miranda, mm-hmm. and we went off to this ridiculous nightclub that I don't think exists anymore called Icon Diva. There was a VIP section, and it was because it was all like a luxury experience, and there was this mad club promoter who I talked to who was so clearly just full of bullshit, can I swear?
Yeah.
He was all like, you know, yeah, it's like the premiere club night, blah, blah, blah. So we drank terrible cheap champagne, cut with even more terrible knockoff Red Bull. It wasn't real Red Bull, it was having like Bolt or something. You know, those ones that come in like the grays.
Yeah. Sounds awful.
And every surface was littered with Ferrero Rocher's. Far as the eye could see.
Did you eat them?
God, yeah.
Because once I start with Ferrero Rochers, I can't stop. I love them.
I think my dream, if I had 6 months to live, I might regret saying this, for my breakfast every morning, I think I'd have a bowl of them with like cream on the top.
They
could be
start,
cereal.
Yeah,
because
the nuts and the crunchy bits on the outside.
I am, and it's a kind of a running joke among my friends that I'm so obsessed with Ferrero Rocher. They're the ultimate luxury lifestyle chocolate.
Yeah.
But you can buy them from a petrol station.
Yes, they're fantastic. I love them.
Have you had the different varieties?
Well, yes, but I don't like them. I do not like the. I don't like the white ones at all. The dark black, you know, the dark
the black pearl.
No, but I think the originals are the best.
Yeah, I mean, I love them for naff reasons. The white coconut ones get in your teeth a bit, but
no, I don't see. That's what that annoys me. I find them irritating. Yeah,
but there's a lovely one I've had in continental Europe. Oh, it's like a lemony white chocolate one.
I didn't know that existed.
You see, I'm quite.
Where were you?
Oh, I think I got them from a train station.
I love that you go like bored and buy Ferrero Rocher.
I think I was very taken in by the VIP experience, the glamour and the Rocher. But also having the sense of, like, this is what I want to do.
Mm.
This, and it felt like a job. And, you know, I went on to do, I was the music editor a bit and then the bar and restaurants bit. And it's really, sort of the student media scene was quite focused.
Okay.
And when I was on the bar and restaurant section, I wrote a Valentine's Day special review of KFC as a date. And I just took the piss.
Yeah.
I've not ever told anyone this before. I've never been to KFC. But among a very, 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 very small group of people,
mm-hmm.
I had strangers coming up to me and saying, I read your review and it was so funny. And it was like, it was such a high.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And again, that whole thing, I think, about identity and being really, really lost and really, like, who am I and what am I doing? And I'm crap at my degree and I'm getting really fat and I hate my boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And I had this, like, moment of connection. Like,
yeah.
Shit, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that I could do it. Even then at the time, you know, I thought, well, this to be my job would be dreamy. But
yeah.
I was the only person on the paper who didn't have like an auntie who worked at the Independent. You know, everybody was going and doing like their cool work experience and holidays.
Yeah.
They all lived in London as well. And I didn't. And I was like, I have no idea how to break into this world. This might be where it goes for me. So that's where I got the compromise job. Mm-hmm. And I was bad, miserable, and got fired. And then I got this job at Bliss magazine. Mm-hmm. And I applied to be an intern, and I was so sure that's the sort of thing that never happens to girls like me. when I went to Blit, because it was based out in Tunbridge Wells in Kent. So okay. At that time, I had a different boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Again, it was a mistake. It was I broke up with my long term boyfriend, mm-hmm. and I remember it was spring.
Did you break up with him?
Yes.
Okay.
And it felt so good.
Did it?
Oh man, I remember. So we had this housemate who. I spent so long trying to break up with him. And I just about, you know, sorted it.
Was he just madly in love with you, or was it just that he was complacent?
I think it was a bit of both. I think we just, you know, we talked so much about how, you know, it's like, but we've come this far.
Right.
We can't throw it all away, these 6 years. We've got to, and, you know, we've been through some really hard times. Like, am I going to tell you this? Yeah, I am.
Okay.
I cheated on him when I was super drunk and super unhappy. And mm-hmm. I was working at this summer camp for kids. And it was a threesome with two boys. Mm-hmm. And I was so, 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 so drunk. And I look back at that and I think it was kind of, in terms of, you know, consent, there were lots of grey areas. Mm-hmm. And I kind of... You know, it's made me realise that I was there for what happened. Mm. And I didn't want it to happen, but I don't think I did either. And I still haven't quite made sense of it in my head. But one of the ways that I did kind of process it was, you know, I've seen Sex and the City, I'm a wild woman, you know, and I didn't address the fact that it was quite traumatic. And also, I immediately told my boyfriend mm-hmm. and... he was like, well, you know, we've just got to get through it. And it was, God, when I look at our relationship and the only thing I can compare it to is like, you know, in Grand Designs mm-hmm. and everything's going horribly wrong and they've got no money and they've been living in the caravan for 10 years and everything's leaking and all the builders are suing them. And they're like, we've just got to get through this. And that's how that relationship was. Yeah. And I think we really should have broken up then.
Yeah.
You know, I found kind of being at university generally a real wilderness period, in part because, for you know, even though in my later teen years, you know, things got a lot better and I did feel a lot more kind of confident. I was still like, this is where I'm finally off on my own and I could be the girl I've always wanted to be.
Yeah.
And then executing that was quite difficult. Mm. I mean, something I did really love about being a student was the amount of dressing up I did, not, you know, hilarious student fancy dress, although that happened too, but for the first time I was absolutely in control of what I wore and my mum could not say, you know, that's too slutty or that's too short or even
we why are you wearing a ball gown,
it's 11 o'clock. I definitely wanted to sort of execute some kind of, I don't know, a look. And again, never quite succeeded.
Yeah.
There are periods, there are things I remember having. God, for me, actually, is always jackets. I had a beautiful, I mean, it was probably not so much, but I loved it. It was like a very, like a golden brown velvet jacket with a flare at the back, with, like covered buttons and loads of like buttons on the cuffs. It's really mm-hmm. Edwardian. Mm-hmm. And a tweed jacket that's like pink with like a fur collar and a lace trim. And yeah, I had this real kind of, I don't know, it was a bit like pre-steampunk, sort of slutty Agatha Christie character kind of. I remember, when I discovered Primark, mm-hmm. my friend Demi took me to my first ever Primark in mm-hmm. Leeds. And mm-hmm. at the time, I was watching Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf a lot. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to be Elizabeth Taylor in that film. And I was like, it's bird nest hair. Heavy. I probably looked a bit more Coronation Street than Elizabeth Taylor. Mm-hmm. But I remember like having the wrap dresses, fur jackets, always wearing like kitten heel shoes, the really skinny heels, and getting wedged in like bridges and cobblestones
in everything, anywhere you time.
I used to wear stockings a lot because I was like, I want to be the kind of girl who always wears stockings.
Yeah.
And always feeling like a hold up, a cheap £1 hold up, pigging at the top of my leg and rolling down.
So you're playing with your identity a lot then. Tell me about your makeup at the time then.
Oh, I do remember, and this is quite late, but having a trip to see Demi, who was living in Paris for a year, and I learned about blusher, and I was really, really, really late to that party. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, it's not just like you make your face sort of flat and you put a load of eyeliner on and you go. Like, you can really like have cheekbones. And I remember buying this blusher I loved. It's a MAC one called Dam, as in French for lady. And yeah, sort of doing stuff with that and really.
But you always enjoyed makeup. Were you someone who wore makeup every day, and do you wear makeup every day now?
I think I did wear makeup most days then. I think I never quite knew what I was doing, but I didn't want to admit that I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, because I was like, I'm supposed to be glamorous. Mm. I'm supposed to be on this.
Also, when you assume an identity and you kind of think, I'm dressing up in this coat or these shoes, it's much easier to do that than to do the makeup that goes with it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It was that sort of that artistry. I've got very, quite cack-handed. Mm. I don't wear makeup every day now because I don't have to. And I think for me, that keeps it really, really fun. I've got makeup on at the moment. Mm-hmm. But because I work from home a lot, you know, if I'm not going out. But then, because I'm trying to shop less as well.
Yes.
My friend Hannah put it beautifully, and she said, the woman who lives in my wardrobe has an amazing life. And so I do buy things, again, for this idea I have about myself. And then if I'm at home, if it's, you know, not like today when I'm out, normally I'll get up, I'll put on my gross, sweaty gym clothes. Probably faff about for some time and do some emailing or try and do a bit of work. Then go to the gym, come home. Even though I don't do, it's not like I do a long workout, but going to the gym seems to take a really long time.
Yeah.
And then I'll be starving.
Before and after as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'll make some food because I've probably not eaten very much. And then I'll eventually get around to like having a shower or having a bath. And then I'll be like, it's a bit late for me to bother kind of getting dressed. Yeah, I just put on jeans and a jumper or pyjamas again.
So are you quite into having a rhythm to your day now? Is that important to you?
I wish there was more of one. I wish I could be a bit stricter with myself. Something I do that I learned, I think, from a Caroline Hirons cheat sheet that for internet friend circulated was I try to wash my face as soon as I get up and do the kind of, you know, do a cleanse or a double cleanse, do the toner.
Do you have problem skin? Have you ever had problem skin?
I've never had, touching the wood, like full-on acne.
Right.
I do. I've got a big spot on my nose just at the moment. I mean, you know, and it feels really sore, and I'm like, don't touch it. Don't, because my impulse is always
It's impossible to leave them alone.
Got a bit of I don't know if it's full-on like rosacea, but I've got quite a lot of redness on the side of my face.
And you've written about liking a bath and kind of enjoying that element of things. So are you quite ritualistic? Do you enjoy having time to yourself to kind of sit and be in a bath and wallow?
Definitely. And increasingly, as I get older, I think I've become much more kind of, I'm here now and I'm doing this. And I think especially because this winter, I felt very cold. And I have points in the day where I'm like, oh, I could just fancy a bath. I'm like, no, you've had a bath.
Yeah, like a bath is almost something you do just to get away from your cold and your life. Yeah.
It's a nice treat, especially when I'm like, when I finish this piece, I can sort of submerge myself in the water. And I definitely spend the most money on things that smell nice, and I'm a sucker for them. And I love beauty, but I don't know if it's a bit because if something smells good, then I can't use it wrong. It's like it's got one job and it will do that job. But
do you have a favourite thing you put in your bath?
Oh,
and also favorite perfume, if you like smell.
And perfume, that is a really difficult question. I love the winter one. I loved. I've been wearing a lot at the moment. Is Coromandel, the Chanel one. It's really good, woody, and so it kind of, it's one of those ones that it's a sort of the real, like, you know, a bit of a vet of a burn. Then it dries something much softer and more powdery, and it's one of those ones that everybody's like, oh my god, what is that?
Yeah.
Today I am wearing one. It's a brand called Rhodes, and it's called Fool Around. I bought it because it's called Fool Around.
Yeah.
I had a Liberty voucher.
Yeah.
And I thought, why not? I love the Shantico ones. I love Petals and it's one called Le Wild. I think it's got a bit of like tiara flower.
Yeah, that's Shantico, isn't it? It's a nice bottle too.
They're quite a bit Jane Collins and Dynasty, those bottles. They're quite
I quite like that though. I like a perfume bottle to feel like an event.
You want something that's gonna really announce itself.
Yeah.
I love the Diana Vreeland ones, and there's one called Simply Divine that I want to, but I'm really worried they're gonna discontinue it. So
I'm really concerned about that too. She does a blue one, I can't remember what it's called, something like Astoundingly Amazing or something like that.
They're quite, 'cause you don't see them everywhere. And then I thought I might treat myself for my birthday. And then the perfume that I was wearing the day before I met my husband, that I love so much, is Dior Forever and Ever. Yeah. And really unfashionable, but I love florals. Love the freesia in that. And I did, and I was circling it for ages, and at the time I really couldn't afford it, and I thought it was quite expensive, but I was like, I just want this so much. So I bought it for me, and I met him the next day, and I wore it on our wedding day.
Yeah.
And it seems to be, it makes me feel lucky, and it makes me feel like spring, and spring is my happiest time.
Yeah. There's also something lovely about buying something that you slightly can't afford.
Yes. Well, and also I've got a theory that if ever you're going to buy something, if you get the cheap version, you always end up getting the expensive version eventually.
Agreed. So I think it was Davina McCall who came on the podcast actually and said that she was someone who could never buy the cheap version, even if she couldn't afford it. She's like, I'd much rather wait to get the real thing. It just felt like a really important thing for her.
Well, it's a bit like, I probably don't need to work on a MacBook, but do.
Now you're a very successful writer and journalist. You're very successful. When you go and you do talks, panel talks, and even so, let's say your Instagram presence where you post pictures of yourself, do you feel slightly nervous about that? How do you, you know, because it's one thing to put your voice out there, it's quite another to put your image out there as well, and sort of give it all to people to almost judge.
I really, really do. And events are really fun, but also, so I'm, my book's out,
in
a couple
out?
Of weeks, so it's March the 7th. Events are coming, and I was thinking about this, and having a real, like, and still now, you know, I'm absolutely overjoyed when people ask me to do them. It's so nice of people to think of me, and I've done enough to know it's not scary.
Yeah.
And you go, and it's quite nice because you can only be as good as you are in the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't, it's not like writing where you go back and revise, but still I just feel a bit like I can only disappoint you. Feel like I'm never quite gonna be what people are hoping for, and I hate that feeling. And Instagram, I feel like I've got a bit more control over it. I still feel weird about it because I have this idea in my head. There are people who are just instinctive Instagrammers, nature's Instagrammers. I think you probably are, but I am not one of them.
Right.
I feel quite kind of, I don't know.
Of what you think, people who just like sharing images or
I mean, I cannot take a good photo. I'd love to be more playful with it. You know, I love fashion and clothes and dressing up. And I'd really just love to be like, you know what? Here's me in some clothes, but and I always feel just a bit. Come on now, who are you really?
No, you see, when I asked you that, I was asking because I really like your fashion post, and I think that you talk about stuff that's important to talk about, and you put the image with it, and it all works together. It's almost like you've written an article and put the perfect image.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
To me, is a good use of Instagram. I'm surprised to hear you say that.
I do love the captioning,
right?
And I love having, you know, the chance to do jokes and things. That's the fun bit. And also, yeah, I think it is a really nice space. I think if I could just move that switch in my head and see it as a joyous and creative thing and not be like, oh my God. Now I think I feel very differently about journalism increasingly, and that it's becoming in different ways a difficult time for it. I think I've changed as well in terms of the writing I want to do. So that's, I would so much rather do poetry than punditry.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be like, here's this thing.
It's quite a nasty, I mean, the trolling and the element where people comment a lot because of the internet, it means it's quite a nasty space sometimes.
Where does it come from? Like, it's not, because when we talk about it, it's as if there are five, you know, bad people there in the anorexia.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody dodgy is that even the stuff that's not out and out abuse, it's just there's so much mean-spiritedness.
Yeah.
And
it
breaks my heart, and it makes me, it's the one I want to be hopeful about humans. I want to believe that we are intrinsically good and kind and uplifting of each other. And that's when I think, are we though? I am an obsessive Simpsons fan.
Okay.
And the joke I come back to constantly in my life, I don't know if you know this, but it's when Homer is trying to construct a barbecue and you see him and initially it looks like he's done a perfect job. And it's like, that's a fine looking barbecue.
Yeah.
And it pans out and he's just holding the box and he's like, why does it mine look like that? And it's
just disaster
behind him. Like,
yeah.
I feel like that is the greatest metaphor for life and living life in social media times that I can think of.
Yeah.
And we need to be honest about the fact that our barbecues are shit. And that's fine.
To finish, because I'm aware that I've kept you talking for a long time, but I just wanted to get maybe some of your things now that you use in your routine that make you feel good.
Oh, well, I think it's called Charlotte Tilbury Flawless Filter. It's newish and it comes in the glass bottle. Yeah. And every time, because sometimes I think I can use something for a while and love it, and then it turns on me and I'm like, am I going to get the ick? Is it going to get the ick with me? But no, it's...
And newness, just newness can make you feel like something's good even when it's not.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But this is magic stuff.
Yeah.
And it really does do that, like, proper, like, jack-o'-lantern look from within.
Yeah.
Explode a candle.
What one do you use? Two?
Yeah, I think I know, because I went to Selfridges,
yeah.
I think, and she was just like, this one. So, yeah, I'm quite fair.
Yeah.
So, apart from
maybe two or one.
Mentioned redness. So
yeah.
I think it was that. What else do I... like, I use a really, really, really cheap sort of matte bronzer as a concealer. It's just a CYO one. I think it's about £3 or £4.
Matte bronzer as a concealer?
No, sorry, as a contourer.
Okay,
so I just do a proper, like, the reverse threes.
Okay, yes.
And sweep it around.
CYO is a very good brand. I use their lipstick a lot.
I just got some. It's called Sleepover. It's a really pretty pink. It's really dusky.
Okay. Is it the one with the lip liner on one end and lipstick on the other?
Oh, no, it's just a basic lip
balm. Okay, but look out for those because they're really handy. They've got the exact same colour lip liner on the other end.
That's what you need.
Really handy.
I do love a bit of sea tails. I'm using the Sunday Riley CEO. It's got vitamin C and
moisturizer.
I love it. It's like a serum.
And it smells properly of oranges.
It really, really does.
I
think I love it. I also think that I have to love it because it costs £70.
It's extortionate. Don't use it at the same time as acids though, on the same day. It's way too much.
I will stop doing that.
Sorry, it makes me nervous. I feel like someone's mum or something.
And I, most nights, I use Rapid Lash because I love an eyelash extension, but an eyelash extension does not love me.
No.
So I've been weaning myself off and trying to.
I can't bear them as well because I like them at first, but then they start to go a bit batshit. Like they look a bit mad. They hang at weird angles and things. Yeah.
And they go a little more. Maybe it's just me. Might go a bit crusty.
Yeah. They look a bit like mad
I've
old
paid
woman.
A lot of money for them as well.
Yeah.
It's not like, because I know you can get them done for a tenner, and I'm like, I don't expect those to be good.
No,
but, you know, it's like £200. And
and
that thing as well, where you're always like putting your hands in front of your face, but.
And it's slightly too long. I think one day we'll look back at that and it will be like people overplucking their eyebrows and like just look ludicrous. I'm like, I had it done a couple of times and I'm like, do you know what? I'm actually not into it at all. But Rapid Lash, I'm very into because it does work.
It does work.
Yeah, it really works.
Because there's that super expensive one as well and it's not cheap, but it does last for a while.
Yeah, and you can put it in your eyebrows too. But like Rapid Brow is also really good. They both work. They seem to make hair grow. I'm very into the Rapid family.
I tried to buy some castor oil for that purpose, and they wouldn't sell it to me because people make bombs out of it now.
I know. And also, castor oil is so messy. But like Rapid Brow just comes on like a mascara wand, and you just put it through in it. Like because I had all these plucked out bits, and it's helped them to grow back quite a lot.
You've got really, really good brows.
I did. I'm on a crusade at the moment though to get people to stop doing shit to their brows because I'm so sick of HD brows. So I've actually put nothing in mine, and although it makes me slightly uncomfortable because I'm used to the comfort zone of filling them in, I'm now like, no, I will not do it. I'll use a bit of Rapid Brow, but I'm not going to be part of it.
I think about this all the time. I was on the tube, I think it's before Christmas, and there were teenage girls, and I love, this is going to sound creepy, I don't mean it to, I love when teenage girls have really like committed to a trend and
yes,
together
completely.
And when you see those things and everyone's got like the same backpack and the same bit of jewellery. And these three teenage girls had exactly the same eyebrows, totally different faces and bodies and everything.
Just matching Sharpie brows.
So then they sell stencils. I'm like, how can you sell an eyebrow stencil? They're so personal. They're just meant to look how they look. Because I'm really, really lazy about mine.
But yours are nice. They suit your face.
Well, I think it's a God, is it Maybelline? Or yeah. But it's like, it's a really cheap, like, it's like a, literally a crayon. And I just sort of do a quick, like, just to kind of give it a bit of something. Oomph. Again, because yeah.
They're quite blonde.
Quite fair.
And
yeah, perfume I wear.
Yes.
Every single day.
So. I could literally listen to you talk the whole day about beauty and your life. I feel like I've just sort of let you roll. Thank you so much for coming on, Daisy.
It's my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
And I'm going to put links to your books underneath because I think all of them should be in there. We'll flag all the dates and stuff like that. But thank you very much.
It is my pleasure.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.